You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. Support us on Patreon at patreon.com/CivCast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to a new episode of CivCast. My name is Kyle, and I'm joined here by my co-host, as always, Wouter. Hello, Wouter.
Hello, Kyle.
How are you doing on this lovely Saturday afternoon?
It's really cold in the Netherlands, so a bit cool, but luckily we have heating.
We are actually having some spring weather here. It's very nice, like in the 50 degrees Fahrenheit,
jealous.
So we're out of the freezing, frigid weather, but it's still a little cold, you know, cold enough to wear a sweatshirt around.
We can ice skate on natural water next week again.
Oh, gosh. Okay, that is cold. That's too cold for me. Today we have a fun episode because we're going to have Vector Cat join in. And if you don't know, everyone, Vector Cat is the one that's been running the CivCast challenge for us while we were on hiatus. And he's going to continue carrying that torch while the show is running. So as we were talking about last week, CivCast Challenge will continue to be a monthly thing, and it's going to continue to be run by the community. So Vector Cat, like I said, will join us probably when we're about 30 minutes or so into the episode to recap last month's winner and to announce the rules for this upcoming month of February. He said there's also going to be a new Reddit post, so he's going to plug that, but I'll save that all for him when the time comes. Wouter, you and I, though, are going to kick off the show by talking about emergencies and alliances. Which do you want to start with first?
I think it would be good if we started with the alliances first and then dive into emergencies afterward.
Alliances first, emergencies afterward. Okay, Wouter is our resident expert. As if you didn't hear last week's episode, I myself am in a Civ burnout mode. So Wouter here is the guru of all things who's been keeping tabs on all the rise and fall news as that's been coming out. We are what, 5 days away from release?
5 days, man. I can't wait. I'm just so excited to jump into it.
It's so did you pre-order it yet? Are you a pre-order these days, Wouter? Are you purchasing?
I am a lucky fellow, and I got hooked up by 2K for a press copy so that I don't have to pre-order it.
Nice.
They will give me one when the game releases. Thank you, 2K.
Fantastic. That's great to hear. So let's dive into alliances then, Wouter. Where do you want to start with this? How we've got different types,
well,
right?
I think it's good to start with what it was in the base game and how we will go over into the new expansion.
Okay, so take us away.
What you had is like you became friends with a certain type of leader, and you declare a friendship and everything like that. That's still all in the game. What you usually did then, you eventually unlocked the possibility to make a full alliance with that person or go for a defensive pact. Defensive pact allowed the other player to declare war on the person who declared war on you with less warmonger penalty. I think you got a specific cost belly for it. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it didn't make him immediately go to war when you were attacked. While a full-on alliance shares visibility between both players, and you literally are pretty much playing together against everybody else. That is a little bit different now. You don't have the defensive pact anymore, and you don't have the alliance as we had it anymore. Instead, they've decided to split up the alliances into five different ones. Research, military, economic, cultural, and religion. And you can have in total, five alliances now with five different players, one for each of the different types. So you can have only one research alliance, one military alliance, and these are your kind of alliance slots. You can use these slots to ally yourself with people. Now, allies start at a certain level. So when you become allies, you start building up trust and getting more used to each other. Your networks are getting more integrated and everything like that. And eventually your alliance will be able to level up to a second level. And after that, even a third level. And what that does depends on what kind of alliance you have. And I will go over all the alliances later. But the big thing is that you need to keep building up your alliances to actually get to the higher levels with bigger rewards from them. So the research one is giving you signs from trade routes for both cities. And on a higher level, it will also give you Eurekas, that's on second level, for texts that have already been researched by the other player, as far as I know. And on level 3, they will give you research bonus to texts already researched by your alliance partner, or to text that you are both, if you're researching the same tech at the moment. And you cannot have the same type of alliance with multiple civs. You can only have one of each. So you can have only a science, if you want to have a science alliance with somebody, then you need to have it with only one specific player. So if you make a science alliance with Germany, you can't do one with the Netherlands, for example.
Ooh, that's going to be interesting. So is that going to make us be a little bit more choosy about not only... it sounds like we're going to be balancing a lot of different components here. Not only are you going to be balancing what proximity, so you know you might want to be allied with the people that are on your border so they're not going to war with you, but what alliance you make with that sort of player might be very different, because if they're not strong in science, you don't want to make a science alliance with them. Is that kind of the direction we're going with that, Voucher?
Especially because most of the alliances really benefit from trade routes. You don't want to go make an alliance with somebody that's really far away usually, because you won't be able to benefit from it from sending trade routes their way. If you get like 2 or 3 extra science out of a trade route with your alliance partner, but your alliance partner is on the other side of the world where you can't get any trade routes to, then that is not really going to help you that much. You might rather have made that alliance with somebody that's closer that you could actually benefit from it. So yeah, definitely you got to be really picky and choosy with whom you're going to make your alliance and what alliance specifically.
So
you're not stuck in the alliance itself. The alliance is for, I believe, 30 turns on standard speed, and you will be able to change it to a different type as long as you have that slot still open after 30 turns, and just renew it in general or just quit being allies.
I see. So, okay. So proximity is major to this, right? So now we're actually...
Definitely.
So we're not... Because in the previous one, you could definitely become allies with someone that's so on the other side of the world with you, and it made no... There was no difference to that, right? It didn't matter. You had no pros to being
really
proximal than... Okay. So now we do, and that's going to be very different. It makes sense, right? I mean, most of the time, alliances happen with people that are close. You know, you don't usually have alliances on the other side of the world, unless we're talking like World War II sort of stuff. But that's a major change, a tiny, tiny change. Like, it seems small in text, but in
and the
application...
thing is, though, that but the you mentioned World War II, and that's the big thing, and we will talk about this more later. World War II kind of alliances do not fit this description. These are not the World War II alliances that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. This is nothing like NATO or anything close to that. These are just two countries working in close ties together on specific things. If you want something like a World War II alliance, then you will go towards the emergency situations, which we'll talk about later.
Ah, so that's going to tie in that way. And I do know a little bit about that from previews and such. Lynn asks, but what if Montezuma is my neighbor? He'll eat me if I ally with him. Well,
then you just be a good neighbor, send him some gifts, be nice to him, be kind to him, make a military alliance with him, and conquer the world together.
There you go. Conquer the world together. So can you quickly recap, Voucher? What are our alliances again? Because there's a lot of them. We've what? Religious, science,
you have
military.
Research, military, economic, cultural, and religious.
Cultural and economy were the two I was forgetting, or economic. Do we know what all of these different... I mean, some of them are very obvious, right? Like a military alliance, a research alliance. We're familiar with those sorts. What's an economic alliance do? You know, that piques my interest.
So we only, as far as I know, and I've looked it up and I couldn't find much more for it. The only thing that I know is literally on the base level, it will improve your economic output, like gold for the trade routes. That goes for pretty much all of the alliances except for the military one. Trade routes give you that kind of resource that the alliance is based on. So religious gives you faith, cultural gives you culture, economic gives you gold, and research gives you science. So that's on the base level. But I am pretty sure that at the higher levels, there will be something more coming out of it. And unfortunately for the economic one, I do not know it. The cultural one gives you, as far as I know, the inspirations, the same as the way as the research does. Mm-hmm. And the religious has something interesting as well. And that is that the civilization that you make that alliance with will not spread its religion to you anymore.
Oh, so it's not... Well, yeah, I guess that makes sense, huh? Because you can't really have a like... you can't share a religion, so you would be opposing religions. But now, even though you're in opposition, what, you work together to spread without actually conflicting? Is that correct?
Yeah, it's pretty much like we leave you alone and you leave us alone. And with that, we're going to just both do our own thing without getting each other's way. I mean, you probably the thing is, it will their cities will not spread to you anymore. So passively, there is no spreading, but you can still use your apostles and stuff like that.
That yeah, that's going to be interesting. So you're still going to be fighting what on the actual fronts for cities, like meaning you and your ally, though you're not spreading to one another directly in your own borders. You're still fighting over enemy cities, non-allied cities. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. and I just looked it up again. Actually, what the Economic Alliance does is it gives you a bonus for envoy points for every city-state that is a tributary to your ally.
Wait, that was the economic?
On the second level. Yeah, for economic.
Oh.
So if your ally has some city states under its sway, mm-hmm. or you see somebody that has a lot of city states under its sway, you can go make an economic alliance with that. And with that, you will be able to gain a lot more envoy points.
And envoy points are always something I've been fighting for. Like, those are one of the things that I always want more of. You've got to have
you
all those
always more of them.
Little city-states under my control. Lynn brings up a good point in Twitch chat here. It says, one of the most annoying things for me was not being able to yell at people for sending religious units. You can call them out for everything but that, which is a good point, right? There's no way, and at least... And it, does that look like something? Have we seen anything that you can, what is it, denounce people for overly...
I have
religion?
Not seen anything that they actually changed that either.
I don't want to think more than just the top level here, but it seems like something that would make sense. Maybe it breaks something else, but I mean, I've complained in the past that they are always yelling at us for things, and yet when you try and denounce the AI, they're just like, whatever, don't care, this burdens me not. I'm like, but I got yelled at for expanding one tile. Oh.
Yeah, it's still going to be the problem. I don't think they fixed that.
Boo. I actually read a really not so glowing review from Polygon about this, where they said they'd have to play more than the, you know, X amount of turns that they were allowed to before they can tell
150
people.
Turns.
Yeah, but right, the 150 turn embargo limit. They said that thus far they can't judge if it's worth the $30 or not for people because of issues that the AIs had in the past in terms of fickleness, especially as it applies to the alliances, whether we see, you know, these alliances really change how the AI operates, or if the AI is going to be as demanding and kind of unruly as they always have been.
Well, what I've seen so far from also the live streams that Firaxis itself did is that they actually worked on that system and that the AI is a little less fickle, a little bit more stable and reliable in these kinds of situations. See, if you go against our agenda big time, they will still break it off. But the moment you've reached the level that you actually got an alliance with them, as far as I've seen, they are more likely to stay inside of that as well and keep going that way.
This is a far-off question, Valter, but seeing as that question has persisted for many iterations of civilization, with the crazy advances in AI in real-world applications, by the time we get to Civ 7, are we expecting a good AI that can actually that is not the laughingstock of the Civ community? I mean, we're having AIs drive cars and, you know, do all this different stuff. It can machine learn and it can make pictures and stuff online totally originally, blah, blah, blah. In Civ 7, are we going to have an AI that actually knows how to follow the basic rules of the game and play in those confines?
Unfortunately, like, following how AI progresses and everything like that, it looks like it's making big leaps and jumps and everything like that. And it is. But I do not expect any large of these developments in like a game series like Civilization. These are very like theoretical applications in very limited fields. Mm-hmm. And a game like Civilization is so much infinitely more complex for an AI to fully grasp than is driving a car, actually.
Isn't that funny?
Driving a car is easier for an AI than actually playing Civilization on a human-like level.
That's crazy when you think about it, right? I mean, it makes total sense. I agree with what you're saying. But man, you think about that, it's like driving a car with all the pedestrians and other cars and, you know, all that stuff is easier than a game of Civ 6. So if you play Civ 6,
it's just like,
pat yourself on the back.
if you look at the factors, when I'm driving a car, for example, the amount of decisions that I have to take and things I have to pay attention to are usually a little bit less difficult than the decisions I have to make in Civ 6. Like, where do I place the optimal district in 10 turns from now and stuff like that? There's so much more going on and so much more in depth, and there are so many options in so many different ways that it is more complex than driving a car in most situations.
Oh, makes sense. It makes total sense. I just hope that someday in the next couple years, I'm not asking for it in Civ 6, you know, that's too much of a rewriting of the AI. But, you know, I just hope that we get AIs eventually that play a little bit more, you know, at our level. Then again, you know, if they master Civ 7, then what's stopping them from taking over the world? You know, Gandhi AI will not only not want to be ally in game, but he will launch real world nukes at my home whenever I break his, you know, border pact or something like that.
Yeah, that's going to be a problem.
So what do you think, what's the interplay going to be between people's agendas in Civ 6 and the alliances they want to strike up with you? Is that something they've alluded to at all yet? Because that's, you know, the agendas are very, very important in Civilization 6. That was one of their top selling features. So, you know, where are they going to weigh things? You know, some certain AI are going to want, like Teddy Roosevelt doesn't like conflict on his continent. How's that going to affect military, you know, alliances, do you think?
Well, I think that most AIs will pursue like every type of alliance. Therefore, like I don't think you will necessarily notice that a more warlike civilization goes for more alliances towards you, with military alliances towards you, or Wilhelmina, who loves trade routes a lot, that you will specifically go for an economic alliance towards you, because there are a lot of other civilizations in the game as well that they will pursue that alliance with. And I think that the AI, just as much as you, will try to max out all the alliances slots that you have available to you as many times as possible. So that way you will be able to get the maximum benefit out of it.
This does make sense. I don't know, Valter. I'm still nervous. You said there's different levels to this, right? So is the AI going to break? They're not going to break these packs with me, right? At first. I currently feel like in Civ 6 base without Rise and Fall, that the AI is keen to dump me whenever they want. And I feel honored whenever they come to me and say, hey, do you want to be an ally? I'm like, really? You're stronger than me. You could crush me. You want to be my friend. Are these different levels to these packs going to enhance the reliability of them?
I think in general, the moment you struck up an alliance, that they will be a lot more happy with you, and therefore very unlikely for them to break the alliance easily on their part. They might be like, if you strike up a lot of warmongering or something like that, that after the alliance has concluded, because I'm pretty sure you can't break an alliance while it is running. Mm. So the 30 turn standard speed thing, after the 30 turns, they will reevaluate, like, okay, did you just like piss us off massively in some way or whatever, they might be like, okay, we're good now. We're going to find somebody else to have this research alliance with. But if you just play normal and don't really go and piss off them off big time, then they should be able to renew them immediately.
Okay. This is good. This is good. I'm liking this. I feel positive about my future for, you know, alliances with AIs. Do you want to touch on emergencies now, or would you? Do you have more points?
I just want to discuss quickly, like, the military alliance, because that is a really interesting one.
Yes.
The military alliance, what it does, it gives extra strength against units of the of players at war with you and your ally. So if you and your ally declare a joint war on a third party, mm-hmm. then you will be gaining extra strength towards the enemy units. So that's really useful.
Whoa.
Also, the military alliance is the only alliance that will give you visibility over your opponent's terrain. So the military alliance is very much like truer towards the original what the alliance was.
Wow. So does a military alliance also kind of function like a defensive pact, or are those going away?
I believe that all alliances, once they reach level 2, it was Ed Beach in the live stream couldn't confirm it himself either, so this I'm a little bit unclear about it.
I love it.
Because he was like, we did stuff with it and I'm not entirely sure. He said that from second level on, it would count as a defensive alliance no matter what alliance you have with him.
Ah, okay. Okay. Well, that's great to know. So first level alliance, surface level, they are probably, this is all theoretical here, probably not going to come to your aid, because it's what? Just a very loose, like...
It's just friends. Like, yeah, we signed an agreement to help each other out in a certain kind of fields.
Right.
We make sure that all our wooden beams are the same size or something like that, you know?
Yes, our buildings are uniform. We share the same uniform code. But we are not going to defend you should Gandhi decide to nuke you. Oh, no, wait, sorry. That's the wrong thing. That's emergencies. So should Gandhi decide to send an elephant cavalry sort of thing into your territory, you're on your own. Until we get to level 2 of our economic thing, alliance, and then we might come to your aid, depending on
finding. Yeah, because that it will still be the same as the defensive alliance that was before. They will not automatically go into a war with the enemy, but they will have an option that's so much easier for them, and they will be more likely to go to war with them if you request so, I believe.
That's pretty cool. So, Valter, in the long run, does this allow us to have more or less alliances with people? If we can only have one of each of these five styles of alliance, that means what? We can have five allies max?
You're going to have five allies, and I think that's more than you would ever have in a normal game.
I think so, too.
So, if you play on standard, I believe that standard map size has 8 players, I believe. So can you imagine that's like more than half of the AI that you're having an alliance with? That's a lot.
I just had to ask the question. I just had to. You're right. I can't keep allies with more than one person at a time. Maybe two.
So that's going to be a lot. I think it will be already like a tricky situation to actually fill up all those alliance slots.
Yeah.
If you only have 8 other players in there, because there will be one or two of them who will hate you, and you need to be sure to do your effort to make friends with the rest. So yeah, you're going to be able to get more alliances, but it still will be like usually pick and choose which one you want to have with whom.
That's a good point. Someone like me, you know, we won't have a religious alliance, so I guess I'm down to 4. Wait, I can.
I mean, it is useful even if you don't benefit specifically from a religious alliance. You might still want to actually make that with somebody that you don't want to have another alliance with, just to keep them like off your back. Make sure that it will not declare war on you, because there is an added benefit to being friends.
Good call. Do we know what? So aside from the player side of this, where, you know, I'm saying, okay, I want to be military allies with that one because that person has a, you know, that's Montezuma and they have a big military anyway. Does the AI have standards for us to meet before they want to join a certain alliance with us? Like, do I need
probably
to have...
But unfortunately we don't know the numbers for them, what Fair. Makes them decide like for like, yeah, now we want this alliance with you,
right? Because I'm assuming, because when you said that about the religious one, I'm thinking, if I don't have many religious units out there, I wonder if they, you know, see it as almost a waste to join me in that alliance, but that will be something we can talk about after you've already played it.
Oh yeah, because next week I will have played a lot of it, hopefully already, and I will be able to share so much more.
Yay! Emergencies?
Yes, emergencies.
Take it away, Valter.
So, you mentioned World War II situation, and there are a couple of these emergencies in the game with different triggers. One can be that somebody detonated a nuclear device. So the first person who uses a nuke on an enemy civ, after the next turn, an emergency will trigger. And what does that do? That does that everybody else in the world who is not the person that triggered the emergency gets a pop-up and gets to choose if they want to help contain that person's aggression, in this case with a military bomb, or stay away. If you do, you will gain a bonus in some way or form. And if you succeed, you will gain a larger bonus. Most likely, you will share a pot of gold with everybody that joined in and have a kind of a small bonus for the rest of the game. So what it does is like banding the world together to stop a certain player. Another form could be that somebody is gaining too much religious power, or that somebody has been declaring war on a lot of city states. Then your mission will be to free the city state. And all the time there will be like a bonus for the people who are participating in it against the aggressor. But if the aggressor wins, because there's usually a time limit and a specific mission you have to complete, if the player that got the emergency declared upon succeeds, then he will gain a bonus, usually X amount of gold for every member that did join the emergency, plus a bonus that will last the rest of the game.
Interesting. I have heard some, I don't want to say negatives about this, but some cautionary tales from people that have tried the early stuff where, you know, if you join an emergency that maybe you're not best suited to, or that the goal was a little bit lofty, that you really do want to keep out of that emergency, seeing as what, you know, you could really give the enemy some sort of massive bonus. Is that right?
What I've seen so far from it is usually the bonuses are really small.
Oh.
They are not necessarily worth it. Also, you have the problem of like backseating. You can join in an emergency and do absolutely nothing to complete it.
Ah. That's so disappointing.
So if there's an emergency that you have to free a certain city state, which is on the other side of the world, and you know there's Genghis Khan probably will join because he has an army nearby anyway already, you can just join in and literally do nothing and still like receive your share of the wealth.
How much information are we getting about this sort of thing? So do we know who all was joined into it at the time we're doing it, or do we just assume that so-and-so might...
Everybody gets it on the same turn, so you don't know who else will join into it, as far as I know.
Oh.
And on the next turn, you can see everybody joining in. So it's all like, you have no clue who will be joining and everything like that.
God.
It's a very big gamble in that way.
Yeah, as you said, it definitely sounds like a gamble, because you're hoping that Genghis Khan joins to, you know, liberate that city-state, but it is a guess.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And in that way, it's really difficult. So far, it is a really cool idea. I like the idea, but I don't think that the current implementation is perfect for it, especially because the incentive to actually join in is not that great if you actually want to do the effort, because the bonus is not that amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
It is also not an incentive to not do the actions that will trigger the emergency, because you might end up at war with a couple of other players, but you will gain something out of it as well. It's a really weird situation where we're having that. I like the idea, but the implementation is not that great.
That's a little suspect. I was hoping that we could get some better rewards for it, first of all. I mean, especially seeing as, you know, some of the stories I heard were like, oh, yeah, I had to go try and liberate this thing that was on the other side of the world, and I couldn't get there in time. It was just totally unreasonable. And then that, you know, the enemy got the spoils of it, though you're saying the spoils are still probably not that big, but
Well, if you are the one that the merchant gets declared upon, then usually the spoils are pretty okay, depending on how many people are actually participating in the alliance. But specifically, if you want to join the emergency, for you, then the spoils will not be that great, especially if a lot of players start joining in. So it could be a really interesting mechanic, though, for like multiplayer situations. That's the best thing out of this whole mechanic. If you're playing a multiplayer game with, say, like 8 people or something like that, then all of a sudden emergencies become a lot more interesting because you'll be able to actually discuss beforehand with all the other players, like, are we going to join in this emergency? Are you going to join in? You can backstab each other because you say you're going to join in or not going to join in and do the opposite kind of thing. And in these kinds of situations, I think this will be perfect. But in a single player situation where you can have no communication with the AI about it and stuff like that, I don't think it's that great.
See, Valter, this is why we need human-like AIs installed in in Gandhi. There's no problem with that. Nothing bad will happen.
I do hope so.
We are getting to that point where I think we should probably pull Vector Cat in to talk about the Civcast challenge. Do you have anything else you wanted to add to emergencies, or is that kind of all we know for now?
I hope that because the game is not out yet, they're still tweaking everything, that the moment the game comes out and we have the full version ready and laying at our feet, that the emergency situations have been tweaked just enough that it becomes a lot more worth it, and all my commentary just has blown away, and I'll be happy with it, but I'm skeptical.
There is something to be said that they're very good at updating. They've been very good at updating Civilization VI. I mean, we got a lot of patches last year. About every 3 months or so we had a patch coming, approximately three, maybe?
Yeah, close to that, and especially because now we're close to the release, I know they are tweaking the numbers of everything, so especially these kinds of things as well. They have had probably a lot of feedback from the Let's Plays who got the review copies and stuff like that, so I'm pretty sure that some of the numbers in this will be tweaked.
Well, very good. We will hope for that. So, podcast people that are listening to this in Aftermath, you might hold on one sec. We're gonna add Vector Cat to this call. So, for the people watching on Twitch, you might see the window get funky. To the people in the recorded podcast, you won't notice anything. But let's see. This is a first time here. It says I can ring Vector Cat. I have no idea what that means. I hope we rang him. Otherwise, we'll have to restart this call.
There is. Emergency situations have been tweaked
worth it. We need you to mute your side of the thing. You're playing back Valter into us, just as an FYI. I'll give you a sec here to go ahead and do that. Let's hope that happens. Sorry, everyone. First time. There's going to be some little hiccups. Hello, Vector Cat. Okay, Vector Cat still looks muted, but it's not from me. Oh, I think Vector Cat's muting himself. Well, I'm going to pause the... Okay.
Yeah, this sounds a lot better.
Good. Yes. No more Valter coming into us. It's okay. You're fine. So you're in here. Valter's still up on the screen. This is a great success. That works. So I don't have to tweak anything. Vector Cat, you're here to tell us all about the Civcast challenge. And do you want to go ahead and take that away and recap January for us? Tell us what the roles were for that situation and who came in as the winner.
Yeah, sure. So I hate only having one monitor. Not at my main setup here. Oh. Yeah, so January was the randomizer challenge where we, got away from everyone doing the same thing and we kind of tweaked things. And we had some really interesting games. I thought the games where no one declared war were really interesting because we use, early on, it's a lot of fun to take control of some weaker civs and give yourself the advantage. So not being able to do that seems to have made things difficult for a few people. And it seems like I wasn't the only one that had a really hard game this month. Even on Emperor, it was pretty difficult. So let's look at Durdrick, who rolled Poland and got a culture win with 396 turns. First of all, I restart all the time. I think plenty of us do, so I don't think there's anything wrong there. And I think getting a culture win with Poland is going to be really difficult. So nice job there. I have, where was it? I think it's the Burial Grounds Pantheon belief. I haven't played around with that at all, but it sounds really interesting to give a civilization like Poland two different methods of doing a culture bomb. Like, that just sounds really, really overpowered and seems like it was a lot of fun to play with. What else? Really liked the way the post was laid out. It was really easy to follow. Some great notes there. So mad props there. And a huge empire of 22 cities, which, I mean, we've talked on, or you guys have talked, and we've been on Reddit before about having all of these museums and massive cities really helps with a culture and science game. I'm looking forward to seeing how that changes going into Rise and Fall. Mm-hmm. So maybe more fun to play tall. Okay. So nice job, Durdrick. Moving on to, I think it's Rev over Joe. I don't see, I'm feeling Dan's pain trying
right?
to
it's not easy.
Down these things out here. Rev number one, Virjo, did a science win with Rome in 355 turns. And again, mad props for getting a science win with a civilization that does not, on the surface, lend itself to that. And Joe was up against some toughies. We've got Macedon, Australia, Germany, Poland, and Scythia in this game. And that sounds like a bloodbath could easily ensue quickly. This post made me realize that I have never launched a nuke in Civ 6.
What?
Yeah, no. I have yet to do that in any playthrough of Civ 6. I've seen it
They're
on
beautiful.
YouTube, but I've never done it.
you need to launch and,
Yeah, I really do. I've built them, never used them. And he got that fun achievement where you use a legion to clear Fallout, which is just great. and he comments on, burning a few turns just to make sure he got that achievement. And I probably would have done the same thing because it's a real rarity. So nicely done there. Okay, so moving on to Drachman, who, if I'm following this post right, played the challenge twice.
Oh.
Because if I'm reading this right, Drachman has a culture victory with Congo and a science victory with America.
Oh, interesting.
Which is pretty cool. So the science win with America was 318 turns. And out of his post, I've also noticed in my games that the AI will not repair spaceports. They'll repair other districts, but not spaceports. And I don't know if that's just bad AI, which probably is, or if it's like some kind of mechanic to make the science victory easier to achieve.
What I have noticed is that they do repair spaceports, but it is relatively low on the priority list because usually they will rather build another spaceport in another city.
Gotcha. All right. Well, that makes sense. But like, I think I'm trying to remember who it was, but someone in Drachman's game built 10 spaceports, which is just excessive. Like
that's what AI does.
Yeah, that's a lot of production to waste. I appreciated he recorded the points that were scored in his game. I'm still figuring out how points are scored. Like Indonesia was clearly crushing it in this game. And I've finished a lot of games with like a score of 500 or 600. I'm still trying to figure out how you go for a score victory. I don't know how much fun it would be though. Okay, so Congo's culture win, Drachman's culture win with Congo, which was 310 turns, and got the pacifist prestige achievement, which I think is pretty cool. Had a really interesting map, it sounded like. And Drachman was on one side of a border of city-states that were separating him from all of the other AIs. So a really awesome turtle game in the making, it sounds like. It seems like it benefited him. So interesting game. But yeah, played twice. Pretty cool. I came in after Drachman with a science win with Sumeria in 283 turns. It's a fun game. This is all right. I've got a post on there if you want to read it. And then Senor Cuidado came in with France with a culture win in 221 turns, which for me is kind of maddening. Like, this is really impressive for a culture win, I think. Like, have you all had a culture win in that neighborhood before?
No. Nor
I've
had
one that it was really quickly, but I did like a religious cultural game.
I gotcha. Yeah. So Senior Cuidado is coming out with 1,460 culture per turn near the end of the game, which I think is crazy. He talked about his settling strategies a little bit, which I thought was interesting. Wouter, I'm pretty sure you're also a fan of settling as close as possible and making sure you have that contiguous territory.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I am too. So it was neat to see somebody else's perspective on that. And, you know, sacrifice some really good territory just because it was further away for comfort. And I actually think that's a good strategy because land in Civ 6 is power, has been my experience. Also, a great discussion of the power and importance of economic hubs. And it may be one of the last times that, you know, you have a game like this where you can so easily use your trade routes for benefits, because as we know, you're about to have to put more work into getting those trade units with the lighthouse and the market changes. And then lastly here, Senior Cuidado says he capped out at like 12 cities, and I get how for a culture victory that could stymie you a little bit. You know, you really want to go wide. You want to have as museums as possible. But at the same time, I don't think I've ever had a game where I filled every art slot available to me. Like, I always have more than I need. So maybe playing a more reserved city planning game here paid off, because you're not burning production, cranking out settlers and weakening populations. So anyway, interesting month of games. Seems like everybody had fun. I know I did. It was really cool to see all of these radically different experiences. So y'all got any feedback, or y'all want to transition into next month, or anything that stuck out to y'all as interesting?
I have to say, I'm very, very impressed by all the work that you've put into this. I mean, this is, prospering in your hands there, Vector Cat. I mean, first of all, just fantastic work in laying out all these posts, and it looks like everyone's doing an amazing job in how much detail they're including in their posts. I mean, that's been happening for a long time, but these are great. I mean, I'm just blown away by, I love your breakdown here, which gives a bunch of different highlights per turn, and I see we got more Imgur links in here for people's posts like that. I just am very, very impressed by everything that everyone's put into
this. Well, yeah, I've been impressed by, you know, my fellow members of the community too. I mean, when you guys went on hiatus, I sent DMs to people seeing if they wanted to keep the challenge match going, and everyone I asked said yes. So I've been thrilled that, you know, people want to keep playing, and, you know, I wanted it to keep going just because it was so much fun.
Yeah, so kudos to you for doing the effort in setting that up. It's really amazing, and I love it.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, y'all had a good idea. I didn't want it to die. All right, so...
So what are we looking at next month?
Yeah, next month. So next month, we're moving back into... or this month, rather. Yes. We're moving back into everyone playing very similar games. We're going to give everyone February to get the DLC. You know, take your time. This challenge match is going to be with, you know, original content. And then next month we'll have a rise and fall challenge. So, you know, learn the new mechanics, spend the month getting used to it, and then we'll start incorporating rise and fall content next month. So this month we are, I'm calling this one Crusade. So you're going to play as either Arabia or Germany. So your civilization choice is Arabia or Germany. We're playing on a tiny map. And your opponents are France and England, and the opponents you don't choose, or the civ you don't choose, right? So if you're playing as Arabia, the fourth civ in your game is going to be Germany. God. If you're playing as Arabia, and by the way, I know this is dense. I'm putting it on the Reddit page later. If you're playing as Arabia, you're going to go for a religious victory. If you're playing as Germany, you're going for a domination victory. Disable all other victory conditions, all right? So you want, when you're setting up your game, lock every civilization into a religious condition or a domination condition, depending on what you're doing. Does that make sense to you guys?
It
does. You think that'll be easy enough to explain?
Yep. And I think they've done definitely. Something similar to this in the past, right? We've had
we have.
So, conditional play style.
Yeah, yeah. So, all right. So we're tweaking things a little bit here. We're moving to a tiny size map. We're going to be playing on an inland sea map. I don't know if we've done that one before. If we have, we certainly haven't done it in a while. We're going to have a special map condition of hot, and we're going to start in the medieval era. I'm going to put the seed numbers on Reddit for everyone if they want to use them. I've got a game seed and a map seed. And if it's helpful, I'll do a screenshot of what your turn one should look like when you load these seed numbers. So we've had some discussions previously about a one city challenge and whether we want to do that at some point and how there's, you know, it's kind of difficult to do with Civ 6 right now. Mm-hmm. So here's what I've done in this challenge. When you start in the medieval era, you start with two settlers. So the prestige modes for this month's challenge are, it's a two city challenge. So as Arabia, you either win a religious victory with only two cities, or as Germany, you win a domination victory where you can only keep capitals and you cannot conquer city states. So in either instance, the prestige challenge this month is a two city challenge.
Tough. Sounds tricky to me.
Yeah. Yeah,
really interesting though. I like it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be. I hope it's going to be hard. You know, that's what I'm going for. But I wanted to, I wanted to move the start era up a little bit, so that we would have a little bit of a quicker game this month, mm-hmm. so that people could dig into Rise and Fall a little bit more.
Smart. Well, I like it. This sounds like a fantastic one, Vector Cat. So you said it'll be up on the CivCast Reddit. So that's civcast.reddit.com. We'll get that up there. We'll flare that one and sticky it to the top. So that'll be February's CivCast Challenge. And then how long do they have to go for that one? Is that going to be wrapped? It looks
Let's see.
24th is the last Saturday of the month. Do you want them to, since you're announcing these on Saturdays, do you want them to be done with the game on Fridays so that you have a night
I mean,
to
that,
prep?
Or that, like? Yeah, that helps me out. I think this one is going to run, I think it makes more sense to run this one until the 3rd of March.
Okay.
You know, because that gives that gives 4 weeks.
Right.
You know? It's a little bit longer, but not everybody has time every day to sit down and play for a couple hours, you know?
Exactly.
So I'm thinking the Saturday, the 3rd of March.
So do you want them to be done with it Friday night or is Saturday, I guess since we're doing this midday Saturday, they should probably wrap it Friday night, right? Get their posts up about that time?
Yeah, wrap it. So the challenge will close on Friday the 2nd.
Okay, very good. Yeah, because since we're doing this a day early, for anyone out there that's not sure, because you're listening to the podcast version or something like that, we record these now about noon Pacific time-ish. I guess 12:30 Mountain, 11:30 a.m. Pacific. So on Saturdays. So now it needs to close just a little bit early. Otherwise, Vector Cat can't include it in the roundup for today. So
yeah, and that's Friday that's more so I have time to, like, if there are any last minute games, that gives me time to look at it and prep. Yep. You know, the post and what we're going to do. If you finish Saturday morning, you know, as long as it's not 10 people, I'll have time to prepare some notes.
Good.
You know, but it's easier if I can do it, you know, the night before.
Good. So if you can, try and get it in Friday night at whatever time zone you're in. As long, you know, that's the ideal. But if it's a early Saturday morning, Vector Cat can probably do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all right. Well, that's it for February. Good luck, everybody.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us, Vector Cat. We appreciate you coming on here and doing this. And we'll meet up like this every time we're going to wrap a challenge. Then.
Sounds good.
Okay. Talk to you later.
All right.
Bye.
Well, Valter, that was lovely. I like having Vector Cat come on to do that. That's a fun new little switch up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really like the design of his challenges so far, what I've seen as well, and also for the upcoming one. So, definitely good job, Vector Cat. Really good job of keeping it alive and actually putting the word out that, like, if people were interested in everything, picking that up is is great and awesome, and I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, thank you. Yes, I'm just blown away, Wouter. Our Reddit continues to grow. So like I said, for everyone, if you're looking for the details of that challenge, that is civcast.reddit.com is where you can go get all of that. I usually post some notices about the show. I didn't post this. The show is going live today. Whoops. I do post, though, that the episodes are live after the fact. I do link people to the recorded version. So, you know, whatever. Hey, if you do wind up on our Twitch channel, though, drop a follow. That's twitch.tv/Kyle Dempster Studios is where you will find all of the CivCast things going on every Saturday. That's where you'll find me playing games throughout the week. So drop a follow there. Wouter, are you going to be streaming any of your stuff soon for Rise and Fall? Or are you off the Twitch bandwagon? What are you thinking?
Well, I was planning on doing some streaming for Rise and Fall. I am not sure how I can line it up schedule-wise. So when Rise and Fall comes out, I will let it know. You can follow me on my Twitter as well, at Innocentia69, and there will always post notices if I go live.
Excellent. Good. So you can check out if Wouter is going to go live. And Wouter, if you remember to, feel free to post it in the subreddit as well to be like, hey, I'm live.
Will do.
If you get around to it. I forget stuff like that, clearly. anyway, so that's the subreddit, and that's the Twitch channel. If you want to find a place that houses all of this information so you can decide whatever you want to follow, that is civcastpodcast.com. Nice and easy for you there. That is links to our iTunes, Google Play, Twitch, YouTube, anything you want is all over there. So go over there and follow everything. Patreon.com/CivCast. That's where you can go and support us. Love all of our patrons that are, you know, keeping this show alive by paying for our hosting and the website and all that good stuff. Wouter, I feel like that wraps us up for this week. What do we want to talk about next time? What are we talking about next time? What's going on?
Well, next time the expansion will be released. So I think we should probably keep it a little bit more open and just go into the experiences that happened with the game.
Excellent.
And how it feels. And perhaps we can, if you want to make a focus point, let's go talk about all the new civilizations.
Good. Okay. So if you guys want to chat away about the civilizations that are out there, I also want to look at one thing right before we run out the door here. We had a correction from last week that I want to call out, that Finances 1212 on the subreddit said for England's changes, there are no more stacking trade routes. Instead, +4 loyalty for cities with Royal Navy dockyards. This allows for people to still play cities on other continents. So that's pretty cool, and I wanted to just shout that out before we headed out the door here.
I find it really sad, unfortunately. I think it's a big nerf to England again a bit.
You know,
but we're going to see.
They blessed us, then they cursed us, and then, you know.
The +4 loyalty will be really good and awesome, but I have a feeling that this is not a good trade-off.
Well, I'll go cry in the corner until next week when I play England. So if you need me, I will be crying. If you are someone that's in the Twitch chat, I will be playing games here in about an hour. So I look forward to seeing you then. Thank you, everybody that downloads these episodes, shows us love on the subreddit, all the above. We love you very much. And until next time, just one more turn. You're listening to CivCast on the Kyle Dempster Studios Network. For more shows like this, visit kyledempsterstudios.com.